Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
They told me my card will go up tenfold.
Blah. Come on to the rock show. Come on to the people's show. Come on to the premiere show. SmackDown.
It's the 2nd of March of the year of our Lord 2000. All Saints Pure Shores is top of the charts. Don't remember that one, sorry. A little known film though, Toy Story 2 is inexplicably still number one in the charts, in the box office for the third week in a row. Felix Trinidad has just sparked out David Reed to get the WBA light middleweight title. The PlayStation 2 has launched in Japan with 10 thrilling launch titles. That's not true, I think only two of them were good. Pokemon Stadium is out for us non-PlayStation 2 owners. Ricky Butcher has just had the sack from EastEnders.
What for?
Just need to get rid of some...
Just get rid of some dead weight.
Cleaning. That's right. And Augusto Pinochet has been indicted and arrested. Something about human rights violations. I don't know, it was a long time ago. But more importantly, an extremely goofy movie is released to video. And we know that, apart from talking bollocks about wrestling from 20 years ago, we are big, big fans of the crappy Disney sequel.
Oh, absolutely. I love a crap Disney sequel.
But before we get into that, the voice you are listening to is Mafu, the other one at the end of the string can system we have set up here during the lockdown is Mr. Tom Campbell. And we are going to very vicariously talk about what was happening in the wonderful world of SmackDown March 2nd, 2000.
You know,
so how are you, Tom?
I'm good, but you know Ricky Butcher?
Not personally.
Right, fair enough. But you know, like, he got let go from EastEnders.
He did.
Would he have been a thing on the website that said Ricky Butcher has been released, Sid Owen has been released from his EastEnders contract. We wish him best of luck in his future endeavours. And could he have just turned up on Emmerdale the following week?
As Butcher Ricky.
What's Butcher Ricky doing in the Woolpack, Maggle? What's Bicky Rutcher doing in the Woolpack?
Ow. You know who I am, and you know why I'm here.
Where is Millionaire Dingle? So this is where the big boys drink. Look at the adjective. Drink. We are the new world butchers. We're here to take over. Bianca comes along soon. Oh, could somebody please? I don't know whether this is in the parameters of John or not. I want a New World Order Titantron, but with clips of Ricky Butcher.
No, I want any EastEnders guy appearing on Emmerdale, but with the Scott Hall Canadian tuxedo look.
Oh, it's good times. But to answer your question, all is fine here. Still in lockdown. It's a slightly more relaxed lockdown, which is nice. In a sense that we can go for more than one government-mandated walk per day. And on a nice day, like the day of recording, which is Bank Holiday Monday, that is... Welcome. Otherwise, it's one of those where I'm rapidly running out of different things to do. And I'm also now finding TV series that I haven't watched ever and trying to get into them. We watched Once Upon a Time on Netflix. It's something that Alex picked out. And I love it because it's a bit crap. But we're now at that point where we're just digging through some of those. How about yourself? What have you been doing to bide the time during lockdown?
I've been doing more exercise. But not the one I would do when I go to the gym and do the circuits, where I'd walk around with that lovely bit of endorphin and, you know, you hang around other gym people and you feel like you're doing something right because the instructor hasn't yelled at you. So instead I've been doing cardio and some cardio and then some more stretching and some more cardio. So I have lost some weight. I've lost some muscle as well, which wasn't quite the plan. But yesterday I could feel my abs kicking. So that was interesting. I have long hair, I'm skinny, and I've not gone out much. I'm basically college Matthew. So I decided there's some Fear Factory and in me yesterday.
We have all become college Matthew during lockdown.
Oh, you happy, happy people. So I need some study, some World War One poetry and William Shakespeare's Othello, and that's it. And I'm glad of all the things you decided to talk about, that little news brief I gave you there to set the scene. Decided on, you know, Ricky Butcher as opposed to Pinochet.
Well, I thought Ricky Butcher has more news notoriety.
Pinochet shows up in Chile in his helicopter. You know who I am?
But you don't know why I'm here. I'm here copying a bit from Ricky Butcher.
No. It's Pinochet and Butcher. Oh, maybe
oh
not.
My God, what a team.
Oh, God. So what do you think of an extremely goofy movie before we move on to wrestling?
I don't know if I've seen an extremely goofy movie. Is it the one where Max enters the X Games?
I've never seen it either. Oh. I only saw the first goofy movie. They're not extremely goofy movie, the slightly goofy movie.
The relatively goofy movie.
Yeah, I only saw it a few years ago because people insisted that it was actually really good. And I watched it and goes, oh, okay, I can see where you come from here.
I would like to send some love on this particular subject to the lovely people that host the Disney Chat podcast. Because we talked about last week about bad Disney movies, based on a conversation that me and the good lady had about bad Disney movies, to the point where then this got spilled over onto Twitter, and they have now, the guys at Disney Chat, which is a lovely podcast, they now have an episode based on crap Disney movies that is available now. So I like to think we've inspired some content on the other side of the world. Sorry, it's Chat Disney rather than Disney Chat. I apologize. Mercedes and Tash every Monday do a Disney-based podcast, and they did a whole episode about the worst Disney sequels. So big love to you guys.
That's nice. I like to think it came from your utter disgust at me saying, Toy Story 2 is not that good.
Yeah, I think you were very much a major part of that. But it's all right, because from it has come some good bants from Mercedes and Tash.
That's fine. I'm glad that I can help you. But this is Toy Story 2. And getting people on Twitter going, why? We're going to Toy Story 2.
What's your dilemma?
And then they're going, well, you know, it's not quite a Runaway Brain, but it's not an extremely goofy movie either, Matthew.
Good song, that. Runaway brain, never come back. Runaway. Is that the one? What?
That's a one, yes. Well done.
Something like that.
I see you know your Disney well. So.
A man of taste, I see.
But outside of the rest of the planet in this time in history, what was happening according to Davey Meltzer?
Well, so we're going to get into this week's episode of SmackDown from the year of our Lord 2000 in just a short while. Before we do, let us paint the canvas of this particular week in the year 2000 with what is happening in the wrestling world. So with regards to Stone Cold Steve Austin, last time we saw him, we believe he was being held hostage by a deer. And update on Steve's situation in the WWF. according to Dave. As it regards WrestleMania, they are hopeful of Austin being involved in the show. It depends if he is healthy enough to at least deliver a stunner. There's little chance of him doing a match, and they don't want to do a run-in unless he can at least do his move. Undertaker will probably be back on the show, although not in a wrestling capacity. We know how that pans out for both of those. Also this week,
I was more thinking about the deer than I was thinking about Austin, man. Sorry.
There's a bit of an injury report to give you as well. The plan is for Billy Gunn to miss 3 months of action. He's being operated on by Dr. James Andrews for the injury to his shoulder that we talked about in the last podcast. Bob Holly suffered torn rib cartilage, taking a Samoan drop a few days before this week's episode. And he's out of action for a little bit as well. When it comes to WCW, Chris Candido and Tammy Sitch officially got their release from ECW, and they're expected to be there very, very soon. And there's two stories that come from WCW stars' websites. Back in the day, back in my day, before we had Twitter, people would write blogs on their websites. Buff Bagwell would write that he's demanding to be paid what he's worth by WCW. So I'm presuming he's looking for a pay degrade for some reason. That's mean. He says if he's not paid what he's worth by WCW, he's asking for his release this week. Not sure what the going rate these days is for 1.97 quarter, but it sounds to me like he's asking for a pay cut. Not my words, the words of Davey Meltzer.
It's like Sean Williamson is Barry from EastEnders and Extras, isn't it? He told EastEnders, I want £1 million or nothing, and they said nothing, and they sacked him.
And they pushed him off a cliff.
Isn't that right, Barry? Like,
yeah. And he fell into Coronation Street. You know who I am, but you don't know why I'm here.
And his name was Barry from EastEnders. From EastEnders was his surname.
He changed it legally, so it's fine. The other one that has caught my eye this week is from Chris Benoit's website. Chris Benoit's been blogging again. I'd like to think that there were loads of GeoCities GIFs all around the website, just for my own amusement. Now, this all comes from Hulk Hogan appearing on Bubba the Love Sponge's show on the 24th of February. What a toxic relationship that was. Hogan claimed that Benoit was a top talent in WCW. He's a loss to the company. He also claimed that he always spoke up for Chris Benoit. Now, Chris Benoit has set the record straight on this on his website and wrote the following. In the last 4 years of my career, I have seen the fans get shafted innumerable times on potentially great matches due to an ugly word called ego. I can go on and on talking about different events and times, but what I really want to address here regards someone who stands out as an inspiration, a role model, and a leader in the dressing room. Hulk Hogan. Oh, for dramatic effect, the mic falls down.
That could have not been more dramatic.
Here is a guy that would show up and disappear into his locker room, which had a do not enter sign posted outside of it concerning himself, with only how many segments he had, what hours they were on, and which segments were before and after his. He would walk around when he did step out of his confines with this cocky arrogance, as if he were the king and we the paupers. From what I hear, not much has changed. Now, Benoit ends with a very powerful sentence, a very powerful question, that considering the way things go in the world, it's a little bit jarring, but I shall read it. Benoit ends his article by saying, my question is, what kind of legacy do you want to leave behind? Just to go back a little bit, your thoughts on Buff Bagwell?
I think he is someone that gets too much slack for what he was and what he did in WCW, because he was very entertaining as Buff on the Stuff. When he joined the NWO, him just flexing and being a silly bugger behind Scott Steiner, very entertaining. It's just a shame that he was rather like X-Pac in the sense that he had a character that he did 2 years ago, and then 2 years later, he's still doing the exact same character with no evolution whatsoever. So on one hand, he gets too much criticism. On the other hand, blaming him for that one bloody match on Raw with Booker T for being the reason for the invasion not working or whatever is completely ridiculous.
It's been a funny week for WCW guys speaking out in different places. Obviously, Benoit, an ex-WCW guy, speaking out. Bagwell on his website. And Shane Douglas rocking up in XPW. Here we go.
Now we're going to put the podcast into fifth gear. Go on, what's Shane said? We'll keep it down to an hour.
Right, so Shane appeared unannounced at the XPW show in Hollywood, California at the end of last month. So I think it was perhaps the day before No Way Out. He did a 15-minute promo on WCW.
Of course he did.
In particular, some of the potted highlights from this ramble included Bill Bush, Hulk Hogan, and Ric Flair. Douglas did a Sam Kinison routine where he pretended to call Bush up on his cell phone, including yelling out Bush's phone number to the live crowd on the mic. Douglas informed his triple threat. He reformed his triple threat group from ECW with Chris Candido and Tammy Sitch, despite the fact that they're on their way to WCW. Douglas asked how WCW could draw ratings with chunks of fossilized manure like Hogan and Flair. Douglas is still under contract with WCW. Douglas is about to return to TV. This isn't a disgruntled ex-employee. This is a disgruntled current employee.
Wait, he's still in the contract?
Well, we've still got all the New Blood Millionaires Club still to come in WCW. And Douglas is a massive part of that. So
you are right, but I thought that he let... Because the whole Radicals thing fell through and they didn't want him. And so he went, all right, I guess I'm leaving then, because I've already said I'm leaving. And they said, all right, fine, sod off. And then they rehired him anyway because of, I don't know, Russo's influence or...
In that case, I'm assuming then that he... Well, either way, like...
If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But I think it's a funnier story, Tom, if we assume he's still employed by them.
And it wouldn't surprise me if he was still within the company. I'm just checking out another source that states that regarding his time in WCW... he's on hiatus at the moment. It may be a case that he is gone, but he's apparently just on hiatus right now from WCW. Which is either way, the fact that he's back in a feature role in the company a month later after going to another company and just spending quarter of an hour shitting on them is just so WCW it hurts.
He did the George Costanza thing. He just showed up a month later and went, didn't you quit? And he's, no. No, I thought Shane quit. Oh, never mind then.
I'm still here. I don't know what you're talking about. And this is a nice little note.
No, don't be silly. That was a different Shane Douglas.
That was my brother, Dane Shuglas. There he is now. On a lighter note from that XPW show, it was on that night they held a King of the Deathmatch tournament to crown a King of the Deathmatch champion, won by local wrestler Supreme, who sadly we lost a couple of weeks ago. But I wanted just to make a point to honour Supreme, who on this show, which featured just a 15-minute verbal car wreck from Shane Douglas, actually featured Supreme standing out in front of like some ex-ECW alumni to become a Deathmatch champion in XPW.
Absolutely. As a fan of the grimy hardcore wrestling around this time for East Coast and West Coast, Supreme is very much one of the better ones there. He had some amazing matches with Alter Boy Luke, Angel, The Messiah, Vic Rimes, just to name a few. And yeah, the fact that the stuff he did 20 years ago with XPW is still remembered to this day when he passed away, and we'll share him the videos and gifts and everything like that. It was a nice thing to see. And obviously hardcore wrestling isn't everybody's thing, but tough. It's mine. Supreme's great. Kiss it.
How are you?
We'll reenact his catchphrase now. You go, who am I?
Supreme!
Yeah, oh, you know it, Tom. Yes. Oh, that's great.
Well, I remember seeing XPW at this point via the pages of Power Slam.
Yes, likewise.
Because it was sort of being, at least from the outlets that we had, XPW was being seen as like this replacement for ECW.
Yes.
And what were your thoughts on XPW?
I can't wait for the Vice miniseries on the goings-on in XPW. My God in heaven. the fact that Rob Black tried to buy into ECW, they said, no, thank you. And then he's like, right, I'll set up my own company, because he was a porn guy. Porn guys made a lot of money in the just before 2000s, early 2000s. He spent a lot of money. He paid, overpaid a lot of people, so a lot of people were happy. All the stories about New Jack trying to work with them. He said they didn't pay him one time, so he went, that's fine. So he just took a camera. So let's take this instead. This beautiful, you know, porn-ready camera. I went, right, this is mine now. All the stories about Vampiro missing shows because he would come up with these crazy stories. Like I said, sorry I'm late, folks. The door of the plane I was on fell off during the flight. the Messiah attack. It got a bit grim, to be honest with you, that Rob Black was never charged with, never could prove it was him, but there's no other suspects. And finally, ending, coming to a horrible end, with something about, I'm not going to get this exactly right, but Rob Black decided it would be a very good thing to sell tapes of animals getting eaten by snakes. And by selling that and it crossing state lines, that counts as a felony. And that was the end of XPW and Extreme Associates.
Isn't it funny how these dodgy people, no, the videos aren't funny, obviously, but how these dodgy people are caught out in such dull administrative ways. Like how Al Capone, one of the most notorious gangsters in history, what was he arrested for? Well, tax evasion. Right. Like, he didn't file his paperwork. Like, Rob Black, who we believe, not proved, may have carried out a hit on a wrestler. And just generally did lots of underhanded things. And as well as these videos of animals eating each other, what's he arrested for? Well, transporting things over state line.
Right.
Do you know what? If you're gonna be a monumental asshole, at least get your admin right. Because then you can continue to be an arsehole for as long as you want then. They always fail on the admin. If Pachiti ever became like a full on sociopath, everyone will die. Because his admin is spot on.
Oh, right, yeah, we'll pretend. Kayfabe. I can see you winking through the microphone. Yes, Rob Black made Herb Abrams look like a Quaker. So, can't wait for that series.
On another note, on the night of No Way Out, I think it's a nice little nod as well, if we're honouring champions no longer with us. On the night of No Way Out, there was wrestling at Budokan Hall, and it was the night that Kenta Kobashi pinned Vader to win the Triple Crown title.
Oh, nice.
Nice little match
I think I've seen that match.
1949, it finished with a lariat out of nowhere from Kobashi. Everybody is saying it was a quality match in front of 16,300 people, one that's worth seeking out if you're a wrestling fan.
Oh, good. I'm sure nothing happens to that company. That'll completely change the industry soon, so...
I'm sure it'll be fine.
Yeah. Well, that was a hell of an intro, Tom. What say you start off on some good old Monday Night Raw recap?
Well, witty-woo. Pre-witty-woo. Well, this is... we're looking back on...
I was going to do it. Sorry.
Oh, I thought you were going to get me to do it. I was ready to jump in and do it.
That was a royal wee. No, how dare you? You've talked for too long.
Thank you, mate. I have.
Monday Night Raw. Mick Foley's career is over. Punctuated by Jim Ross's solemn goodbye, my friend. It's a very sad moment, a very touching moment. Black and white, slow motion. Anyway, enough of that. Big Show versus The Rock ends with Shane McMahon making his return. And he explains he wants to align himself with the future WWF champion. And The Rock admits, yes, Big Show beat him at No Way Out. But unlike Big Show, Rock isn't going to whine and complain about it all the time. And Triple H is happy to hear this because, due to Rock losing, that means he has to go down to the very bottom and start again. So Rock is pitted against the greatest of greats, the Brooklyn Brawler, Monday Night Raw. The Rock somehow victorious over Steve Lombardi. And Stephanie then hears Rock's pleas for going, can I have someone a bit harder? He goes, sure. Look, Rock, I'll put you in a match. And if you can pick either one of these guys, you can go on to WrestleMania. It's Rock taking on the Big Show and Triple H in a handicap match. But it's The Rock, and he has some of the finest plot armor known to man, so he is able to get the advantage over both men. But of course, Shane O'Mac interrupts again for the beatdown. Which brings us to Witty woo, witty wah, witty woo, witty woo, bada bada bada. Why is he in take at the start?
he's just still kicking back there, isn't he? Incidentally, I don't know about you, but I really liked the Rock start from the bottom story. And because we're so close to WrestleMania, they couldn't really do anything with it. But had we been removed from WrestleMania, had they done this like the night after WrestleMania? Like, I love to have seen The Rock for like 4 months fighting his way through the mid card. There's something about that that I wouldn't be deeply offended by.
You know what they should have done? They should have gone, well, since you picked them up so much, tonight, Rock, finally, The Rock goes one-on-one with Headbanger Mosh.
Yeah. And then it's a 45-minute brawl.
1949, Rock wins the lariat out of nowhere.
But there's something in, like, there was, like, they were desperate to keep The Rock away from Triple H for so long up until WrestleMania. You could have done this a while back and just had it so right, Rock, you're fighting from underneath. And you could have just had all these guys, like, these, a mixture of mid-card goodness or jabronis going, I'm going to make my career by beating The Rock tonight. And you could have someone like a Gangrel going, ah, I'm going to beat The Rock tonight and I'm going to be a made man once I beat The Rock. Gets in the ring, spits blood, dun, 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 dun. Rock bottom, 1, 2, 3. Next week, another one. Like, I like the idea of stuff like that. I think some matches could have been competitive, but building up from the ground up would have been fun, in my opinion.
Yeah. I like Gangrel calling in to Triple H. I've got to get the title shot. White Wolf have told me they put their hit on The Rock. Blair. They told me my card will go up tenfold. Blair.
Blair. Every Gangrel promo ends with Blair.
I have to punctuate every sentence with Blair. Blair.
God love him.
Anyway, we're somewhere in America. We never get told where. And we start with Too Cool. And then the most expensive bit of plastic and WF shows up and fires a bazooka. Da-da-da-da-da-da. Blah! Apparently China is on the cover of Raw magazine. Hey, remember when WF had 2 monthly magazines?
Oh, gosh. And do you remember where one of them was basically softcore porn for all your edging needs? That was pretty much what we had here.
Jericho is teaming up with them. Thank God, I thought it was going to be China and Too Cool. And he is, of course, sans IC title, having lost to Kirk Angel at No Way Out. And they're taking on 3.5 of the Radicals. And we start off with Malenko versus Jericho. Ah, good times. Good WCW non-Buff Bagwell flavoured times. Except now, of course, the reversal is that Jericho is massively over. Then Benoit and Scotty Too Hotty go at it. They still present as being at the same level this time, so Scotty is able to deck Benoit, and then Moon walks away. Benoit and Jericho go at it in one of their only matches. It's a shame they didn't have more on SmackDown. Jericho gets radicalized. Don't think that's going to take off, Tom. Until he gets the mild tag to Sexy. And I think the WCW lads, they're very good at having their WCW work rate, New Japan matches, but they need to work on that whole formula of beat down a dude. And then he gets the hot tag because they seem a bit unsure here. Seem to step off. And just like the first rehearsal, though, the match all breaks down. And Dean Malenko hits Saturn. Hoddy hits the worm on Dino. Eddie tries to interrupt, but China pulls him off. And then China and Jericho brawl with Dino to the back. Sexy lands the hip-hop drop, but Eddie distracts. So Benoit gets a flying headbutt for the win. Good God, there was a lot going on in those last 2 minutes.
It was a busy last few minutes of the match. I thought it was nice 6-man tag to start the show this week. Good action from everybody, I thought. It's just that Too Cool pop is still really good, still really strong. People like Too Cool. And Radicals look good in there as well. And I wish we could have seen a bit more of Malenko mixing it up with some of the bigger lads, because I do feel like he is such a strong performer in that regard.
Absolutely. It's not going to come, though. What is going to come, though, is The Rock walking backstage. Midian says something to him, then gets punched over a table, and that's the segment.
Midian's back on SmackDown for the briefest of times. Just think he flew out for that. He got flown out.
He definitely
out
flew over the table.
And then he flew over the table straight back again.
Hey, The Rock, I'm really sorry about the whole fake men. I think The Rock's like Michael Jordan on The Last Dance here. I think Midian said something very sincere to him, like, hey, Rock, you look really good on Monday. And then it cuts to The Rock years later watching on an iPad going, I look good on Monday? What do you mean by that? Look good. I knew then it was personal between me and Midian. It slaps him. Good times. Have you seen any of The Last Dance?
I've seen a bit of it, yeah. I like it. I'm not a big basketball fan, but I've enjoyed it so far. Particularly like the episode where he goes to space to fight the aliens. Now I've used the podcast on three... now I've used that gag on three podcasts. That gag will now fly off into space and play basketball with some aliens.
Play basketball. I knew it. It's that little pause. It's that little pause you go, oh, you.
It's that little pause where my brain had the same sort of reaction as when you're walking through a field in Final Fantasy VII and a fight starts. You just have that little moment of, oh, there you go.
Not the screen sorry. Turns to glass and you hear that. Not the good fight music, the awkward one.
Also, I don't know whether you've ever on the subject of wrestling and Final Fantasy, hats off to Ben Potter. It does the rounds every so often, but Ben Potter found a great clip of Dolph Ziggler, Big E, and AJ
yes.
with the camera swooping around them, and added Final Fantasy VII victory music, and then a post-fight experience stats bar afterwards. It's brilliant. If you can follow Ben Potter on Twitter and you can see it, it's somewhere on his timeline. It's incredibly well done and well observed by Ben Potter.
That was good. And they were very much compared to Final Fantasy VII when they were a brief team. My favourite Final Fantasy VII wrestling mashup is... Do you remember when the ECW on Sci-Fi title, when they had the big silver, or maybe it was platinum, depends how good your eyesight is, title was introduced. And when they'd show if it was a title match, they'd go like three European title, and they get some intro. The ECW on Sci-Fi one had a phoenix emerge from nowhere, and then like ECW title, I guess a metaphor for the brand itself coming back to life. Yeah, someone like had the summon menu out and like it's like picks whatever the bird is in Final Fantasy. It's like select that, and then it appeared. And it was very well done.
Oh, that's class! Like it was a summon.
Yes.
Which summon would you like to go for dinner with?
Don't you dare forget the names of the summons, Matthew. Come on, your entire life has been building up to this.
I'm going to give you mine to buy you some time.
Go ahead.
Right, Knight to the Round, because it'd be a right laugh. It'd be like a stag do.
Oh, okay.
Knight to the Round.
That's one. Yes.
That's my choice.
All of them? Do they all have names?
I think they're just collectively called Knight to the Round. When you summon them. It's the hardest summon to get in Final Fantasy VII. You have to breed a gold chocobo and go to an island very far away. I feel like, do you know what? If I lived on my own during isolation, it would be a bit crap, but I probably would have started playing Final Fantasy VII, the remake, and lost several days to it by now. Or maybe a full week. I feel like that's where my life would have gone.
Yeah. I like the table... glitch people keep on sending me. It's much appreciated. I would probably go with Anima from Final Fantasy X and ask, what are you? That would kill a few hours.
Surely Anima is an animal, but it's
Not a road warrior Anima. No.
It's like a weird... I've had to Google what Anima looks like, and it it looks like... It looks like a sad fish doing a David Bowie album cover. It's the best way I can describe it.
I was going to call that a horrible description, but now I've seen it, it's hard to argue. Yeah, there you go.
I feel like it's
something
from an album cover.
Yeah, that David Fish, and even better, the full graphic of it shows the upside down bit, which you don't see until you do the super cool Aeon thing.
Oh, yeah.
And then it comes and brings it down, and you go, wait, what the hell is this?
There's two bits. Oh, and the one bit's all chained up, so I feel sad for the bit at the top.
Yeah.
The bit at the top looks like he's having a terrible day. The bit at the bottom...
I would feel sorry for it if it wasn't so good in battles.
Yeah, exactly. Does it just wipe out everybody?
Oh, I mean, look at it. Who's messing with that?
I mean, it's true. It is true. But I have a feeling that that's the sort of one that you'd use on, like, the final boss, and it'd be this majestic animation effect. Rah, whole world on fire. And it would just say, miss.
Anyway.
Bastard. Sorry, wrestling.
Yeah, you know what? Yeah, I can hear people go, I don't care about that. Anima, dark anima, or any other type of anima for that matter. Shut up. But you know who they do care about? The Hardy Boys.
Da-da-da.
Oh, it's good to see them. And I've heard on the interweb that they've been on a diet and they've lost 6 stone in 5 days. That's right. Terry Runnels is gone from the Hardys, citing reasons that she was more upset at the lack of care the Hardy showed her when she was in hospital than she was at the Dudleys for putting her through the table in the first place. Hmm. So the Hardys will have to pick themselves up after shows. But never mind these crap jokes. We get the proper SmackDown debut of S.A. Rios and Lita.
This is an interesting little predicament we find ourselves in. With Lita and Matt Hardy around the ringside area.
Absolutely. And a brief bit of background. S.A. Rios had been on TV challenging for the light heavyweight title in 97-98 as Aguila. Probably mispronouncing that. Most memorably challenging for the title at WrestleMania XIV, a.k.a. the one with 98. Austin HBK, that one. And even crazier, he was only 19 at the time.
No.
Bizarre thing to think of.
Yeah. Why does everyone on this show look so much older?
He was 19 in 98.
Oh, I thought he was 19 now.
I mean, it was... Yes, all right. I realize it would be funny. He was 15 years old wrestling at WrestleMania. Anyway, he's been part of WWF TV for a while. In a very minor part, being in Super Astros, that weird experiment that no one talks about, before randomly showing up on Sunday Night Heat with a new name, a new valet, and pinning Goldberg for the long-forgotten light heavyweight title, which, side note, officially ended the job squad.
Aww.
So, very sad. I know we're all paying attention to that. And, yeah, also, S.A. Rios' little-known valet, Lita, had competed, or rather appeared, in ECW as Miss Congeniality, as Danny Doring and Roadkill's valet. Hadn't really done much to stand out, if I'm being honest. I don't know how she made it from ECW to WWF, but she spent time in Mexico before this, so she knew what she was doing. And it's an interesting pairing, to say the least. They're both dressed similarly, both red. And the commentators pull over how, and we've seen a replay of this on a previous episode of SmackDown, but not match itself, that Lita really enjoys copying S.A. Rios.
Which doesn't make any sense. She just, in the sense that she copies, in the sense that she has a similar moveset, but it's that weird sort of latching onto S.A. Rios by saying, oh, she's copying him. So, no, she's just a good wrestler. She's not copying him. When she said copying him, I was thinking like Miz and Damien Sandow.
Right.
Like Sandow was the stunt double outside the ring for the Miz that time.
Oh, good times.
Great times.
She's more like Ditto. keeping it in 2000. And tonight we get S.A. Rios taking on Jeff Hardy. And as I said, Lita imitates everything S.A. Rios, says Michael Cole, which is weird because I don't know, S.A. Rios slept with Matt Hardy. Gang girls, stop writing those jokes. It's a fast-paced match that loses a lot of its impact after following the previous bunch of Vanilla Midgets, to be honest with you. I'm not sure why they couldn't have waited until after the Viscera match later on, but hey, I don't book SmackDown and don't pretend to. Jeff Hardy gets pushed off the top rope and gets dunked on the guardrail, so S.A. Rios follows with a stunning tope over the turnbuckles. God, he was good. Lola then talks about how good it was by talking about how good The Rock punching out Midian was. I mean, he's not wrong, but they clearly have nothing to talk about here. And This is one of these matches where you almost wish Mike Tenay could make an appearance and start telling us all the important information, but
yeah,
it's not to
be. It wasn't a bad match. It was just they were too invested in like the entertainment part of sports entertainment to really be bothered with it.
Right, and you know, Lawler and Cole are like, wow, that's a move, that is, huh? Anyway, SA hits a handspring and goes over Jeff Hardy to set up a German suplex, which is a spot I've thought about. Has anyone done that before? And I was very happy to see SRS actually did it. So I was like, that was nice. However, the German suplex doesn't happen. It gets blocked. Crowd does not care about most of this match, which is a shame. But it's also not surprising because SRS has just showed up. So he's having to use his work rate right now to get himself over and his pretty hair. Jeff Hardy's counter is described as poetry in motion by Michael Cole. It'll never take off. And SRS lands a top rope Frankensteiner on Jeff, who then rolls outside, and then Lita lands it on Jeff on the outside. Big pop for that. Referee stops Lita from interfering, so Matt thinks, ah, sod this, and lands the Twist of Fate on him. Well, after Jeff Hardy lands the Swanton, Lita lands a sloppy moonsault on front of the ref for the DQ. So he loses, but wins via disqualification, so he keeps his title. And SA's mad, even though she just saved him his title, so he yells at her, she yells at him, she slaps him, and they leave together mad. Doesn't make a lot of sense, to be honest with you, Tom. No wonder SA Racers get forgotten.
But the thing is, this is the slowest of slow burn breakups, because they're gonna still be a thing up until after Backlash.
Right.
Because at Backlash, SA Racers is actually on the pay-per-view with Lita. So this is a real slow burn. Because I thought, oh, there's the slap, and off we go with the Lita Hardy's combination. Then I realised, well, no, that's not for a while yet. That's still a way away. And her pairing, she's still with Rios when that happens. So it's a long build, this is, for the breakup. Like, he's literally just debuted and they already seem to be long building the breakup.
Yeah, trying to do a lot at once here, to be honest with you. So, yeah, and it was it's one of these matches where they're trying really hard, but they would have been better off if they'd slow down. Like, I feel like an old person. I feel like Michael Hayes backstage, but they really were going 100 miles an hour and could have actually stopped to emphasize some of the moves quite a bit. But Jeff would realize that later on down the road. I'm not sure what happened to SA, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, somewhere in the world of backstage land, Al Snow and Steve Blackman are wearing Hawaiian shirts and getting ready for Steve Blackman's blind date. Al is telling us... that he set up Blackman with someone from his therapy group. And she shows up and she's a Steve Blackman fan.
Yay!
No wonder she needs therapy.
Gangrel, you jokester, stop writing this week's podcast.
I'm trying to get employed.
No,
be furlong. White Wolf will let us go.
White Wolf's still a thing, Gangrel?
Yes.
White Wolf told me not to come into work. I went, why? I haven't got any COVID symptoms. He goes, no, we haven't been endorsed at WWF for 20 years. I was like, oh, all right.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans.
Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Guess what, Tom? What? You sat down.
Mate, I am sat down.
You know what's happening, right? Okay. It's back. That's right. The Lugs Slam of the Week.
Yay! It's all in the hugs.
These lugs are made for slamming. That's what they'll do.
Somewhere, right. Do you know what I love, right? Think on this. Lugs. Think on this. I saw this Lugs advert again. And I thought, about two weeks ago, a WWF sales rep was leaving the Lugs office with the biggest smile on his face. Like, probably punched the air as well, having re-signed that big money deal with Lugs. Yes! Yes! I'm going to call my wife. Barbara, I've signed the Lugs deal. You signed the Lugs deal? I signed the Lugs deal. Yes! Get yourself home for your dinner. And then he goes to the pub on the way home and he's like, hey, how's your day been then, Brian? Hey, it's been good. It happened. And the barman goes, you got the Lugs deal? I got the Lugs deal. Drinks for everybody. Brian got the Lugs deal. Oh, what joy. Well, hashtag Brian got the Lugs deal. What a day. What a day for Brian. The best day of his life.
That's right. It was a red panty day for Brian that day.
And that's just on Brian.
There's Gangrel in the pub. Oh, drinks are on you. I'll have a Bloody Mary.
Can anyone try ringing White Wolf off their phone? Because every time I ring, it just disconnects.
White Wolf's turned the bairns against us.
Turn the weeds against us. Just turn the weeds against us.
I can't even get the meme right. Bleh.
He's turned the memes against us.
Oh, that's good. Bleh. Bleh. The Lugs Slam of the Week is not Brian's deal. Oh. It is The Rock getting screwed by Shane O'Mac. That was the boot of the week. Decide and conquer. It's for your feet. Kill all billionaires.
Well
it's
done,
Lugs.
Well done, Brian.
Hashtag Brian.
Hashtag Brian got
sorry,
the Lugs
it's 2000.
Deal.
Sorry, phone symbol 2000. Well
done. Yeah, weird phone symbol we don't understand, 2000.
Yeah. Meanwhile, at the Legion of Doom, Steve Blackman's date talks endlessly, and he looks uncomfortable seeing a personality.
We'll come back to this later.
Oh, don't you worry, podcast listeners. There's no need to skip ahead. There will be more of Blackman's date. Anyway, Shane O'Mac and Big Show show up. Show has changed his look again. Sporting the biggest jacket I have ever seen on a man.
How many of the now rare denim gazelles were killed to make the jacket for Big Show?
I don't know, but somewhere, some dwarfs are using it for their big top in some sort of bizarre circus.
Somebody desires a denim bedspread for a king size. And they are sleeping comfortably underneath there. Somewhere, that denim jacket has been discarded in an alleyway, and a family of kittens are using it to keep them warm.
It's currently the basis of the dome for Ant World.
Big Show's like, oh, I need more of these. Brian, you're on fire at the moment. Can you get us a deal with a denim company?
The ants speak of Antworld and go, damn it, it just can't be broken into.
It's a maximum security prison for grasshoppers.
Some old ant in the ant pub going, there'll be only two ways through into Antworld. Shut up, old ant, you don't know nothing. I've been there.
The bottom pocket.
How do you know about the ways in and out of Antworld? I broke out of it. And they're like, whoa. It turns out the ways are through the right sleeve. And through the left sleeve. It's very anticlimactic, pun intended. And we move on.
Through a pocket with a hole in. I know, because I dug that hole. And you look in the pocket of Big Show's denim jacket, and inside is a teeny tiny picture of Marilyn Monroe stuck to the bottom. that a rat police guard throws a stone at, and you hear it echo all down the lining of the jacket.
And the ant security guard goes, no!
He crawled through 2 miles of shit and piss to get out of that jacket.
Christ. Puts his arms up in the air, I'm free! And he's immediately run over by an 18-wheeler.
If you've come here to talk about wrestling this week, you're bitterly disappointed.
Oh yeah, sorry, back to Shane McMahon and the big jacket. Big. He should have renamed himself. He is no longer the Big Show, but the Big Jacket.
Why you got the big jacket? Well, I've got a big jacket. Fair enough. It's easy enough.
And when he gets ready for the show, stop he shouts, jacket!
He's unbuttoning his jacket. He means business.
Oh no! We know when the jacket gets unbuttoned. That's when the shit hits the fan, so
and it
that's
gets
when,
quite
sorry.
Warm. I'm gonna take my jacket off. Why are you kicking off? Are you about to hit to your finisher? No, because then I won't feel the benefit when I go outside.
Loud asshole chants for Shane McMahon and presumably people listening to this podcast chanting it at me and Tom. And Shane McMahon replies, he's missed them too. Shane McMahon recaps what we've already seen from No Way Out and Raw. The kids call him Shane Recap.
Oh, Christ.
And by kid, I mean, of course, our favourite vampire. Bela Lugosi.
But
he says he can't allow The Rock to dominate the WWF like Austin did. He says Vince allowed Austin to become an icon, so eventually he became too big for him to crush in the end. And I actually like that. Even though we're getting a lot of Shane and blah, 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 how great is Shane, how big is Shane's dick and blah, blah, blah and all this stuff. That's actually a nice bit of reasoning that I think doesn't get looked at enough.
No, exactly. Anyway, I like it.
Absolutely. And Big Show will take on Triple H at WrestleMania. Of course he will. The Rock shows up and says, you bleep The Rock off. Don't know what that means. The Rock isn't number one contender or main event in WrestleMania, but he's still the people's champ. Crowd cheer. So if he's got nothing to lose, he'll take on both Shane and Show tonight. And Shane says, wow, 2-on-1. That's music to my ears. And then we get music in our ears as Rikishi shows up. I don't know who wrote that in the script, but bloody hell. He said, it's like when someone in a crap film goes, oh yeah, you and what army? And you're like, oh, okay. You know, the 1973 battalion shows up. You're like, oh, okay. Who would have seen that one coming? Rikishi shows up and he says The Rock doesn't need his help to beat these two jabronis, but the crowd want to see two things. Show taking The Rock bottom and Shane's face in my bottom. Shane's like, wait, no, I don't want a tag match. I want a handicap match, but no one cares. I'm going to move on. Fun segment here. Any thoughts, Tom?
I liked it. And what I like is, we know at this point how far in advance they're planning the Austin Rikishi story. So it makes them planting Rikishi with The Rock so early on makes so much more sense. They could have kind of gone, I think they could have got leaned in a little bit more to this over the months to come by having Rikishi very much become sort of The Rock's silent protector. Not overly so, but on the odd occasion when like the numbers were stacked up against The Rock, you could have Rikishi just come along and go, hey, you don't need me, but I'm here to help you. You know, or have him just take out somebody on the sly. Like, you could have done a bit more of that. Maybe they did, and I didn't notice it. Maybe we'll find out as we go along. But no qualms with Rikishi and The Rock teaming up tonight. That'd be a fun main event.
Yeah, that would be nice. Like, The Rock's like, oh, man, Rikishi, I can confide in you. You're my guardian angel. That's right. I mean, and what am I going to do about Austin if he comes back to win a title? I can always run him over. What? What?
I mean, you could always run over there and have a think about what you'd do.
Yeah, well, when I feel bad, I go for a run in my car.
I drive to the balloon warehouse.
Yeah, sometimes I can't be bothered to do the cardio, so I just get in the car and drive a bit and I'll pretend I've walked.
Cardio.
Oh, God, Tom. Wait, here's Gangrel. And I thought my joke sucked. Blah!
And I thought I sucked.
Oof, he's not a fan.
Blech.
Backstage, we get the SmackDown debut of SmackDown for PlayStation 1.
Steph!
And who better... Oh, no, I hadn't thought about that. Yeah,
how'd you hit a finisher on this? All the controls are different to No Mercy. Steph! It's not as many characters.
I think that they rushed this release because of the popularity of WWF, and this is exemplified by the fact that we got SmackDown 2 less than 6 months later.
Steph, the controls are clunky, and the animation's janky. Steph, why is it just... Why could you not see the arena when they walk out, and it's just the video behind them? It looks weird. It looks like they're trapped in Undertale.
Is it a metaphor, Steph? I can't tell. I take things at face value. I don't understand subtlety. I don't do well with deepness. I once nearly drowned in 2 inches of water.
So this is the launch of SmackDown. Yuke's and THQ getting that lucrative WWF PlayStation release right now. Very different to the WWF games that we have known. What were your thoughts moving from No Mercy to SmackDown?
I preferred No Mercy, but nearly everyone I knew played SmackDown. Why is that, Matthew? Was the PlayStation generation just stronger than the N64 ones? No, you could get a copied version of it off your dad's mate a lot easier than you could with the No Mercy, which you would need to get a, I don't know, what was a bootleg N64? The Doctor 64. That's right, because my mate had one. It looked cool as hell, but I had no idea where to buy one. But
really?
We all had a friend of your dad's to get a PlayStation 1 chipped and then get three of SmackDown on a VCD.
Oh, man. That's a
Sorry, treat. Not even a VCD. No, what am I talking about? CDRs. God.
That is a treat. I'm curious as to why they... Now, I don't know whether you can shed any light on this or if there's any video game fans that can shed any light on this. Obviously, the big difference is a lack of AKI, the lack of Aki. Why did the Aki thing come to an end?
I don't know.
Me neither.
I assume that there was the license just got outbid. I mean, they had taken it from Acclaim, so...
Possibly. But obviously, the first WWF No Mercy was developed by Asmic Ace and the Aki Corporation. This was still a THQ game. But it was developed by Yuke's, or published by Yuke's, rather. It was developed by Yuke's, sorry. It was developed by Yuke's. So it completely overhauled the engine, brand new style of gameplay. I didn't sit very well with this. I think I'm the same boat as you, where I preferred No Mercy. I was excited to get it, excited to play it. But I think even first couple of days of playing it, I thought, do you know what my instinct was? This moves too quickly. Like the animation
is
so
a lot more
fast
paced.
Yeah, it's so. But I quite liked the slowness of No Mercy. I quite liked that pace, and so it was a bit like jumping into a cold bath for me personally, of just how different it felt. I thought the lack of entrances was a shame, because I was a big fan of... I think there's two different types of wrestling fan when it comes to wrestling games. There are some who just want to like simulate a wrestling game, and that's fine. There's like All Stars and 2K. The new 2K game coming out, which are going to be right up your cul-de-sac. But there's some that just like the whole product of the wrestling. They like the arenas and the entrances and the pizzazz around it. And you lose all of that when you move over to SmackDown, at least for a couple of years, by just having like these very cold feeling video entrances. That don't really make any because it's the guy. It's like you'll have The Rock's entrance in this game, and it'll be The Rock walking down to the ring, getting on the ring apron and posing. But you don't see the ramp, you don't see the ring, so it just looks like you've got The Rock's video and The Rock walking and having a seizure. Like without the things around it, it makes very little sense. But the gameplay itself was fine, albeit a bit pacey for me. Pop quiz question for you. Do you know what this game was called in Japan?
No.
It was called Exciting Pro Wrestling in Japan.
I mean, it was.
because there were several reasons. They were concerned that it might not. There was possibly the reason, the main one, that they were concerned it might not sell as well with WWF's branding on it, because the wrestling world in Japan is so different. It was then, still is now. But there was the concern by making it like a WWF heavy thing, it wouldn't sell as well. So sort of exciting pro wrestling by emphasizing the pro wrestling part of it, it might connect it more with All Japan and New Japan and that world there. So that's why the name changed. That was up until 2007 when SmackDown vs. Raw came out, and they just said, oh, we'll call it SmackDown vs. Raw.
Of course, D'Lo Brown is playing SmackDown backstage because he's a huge nerd and he's picked himself to take on Triple H. Probably the only time that'll happen on TV. And Kurt Angle is talking about how good he is, what a great wrestler he is and everything. And D'Lo is ignoring him because the game is just so fast-paced that he has to give all his attention to WWF SmackDown. Then road agent Sergeant Slaughter comes in to tell him the Godfather is looking for him. So D'Lo, for some reason, then switches off the console and leaves rather than pause it. I don't know what that's about. Maybe he wasn't told about the exciting pause feature. And then Angle is for some reason very mad that Sergeant Slaughter would dare interrupt Kurt Angle's rant about how great he was. And so Sergeant says, hey, how dare you talk to me like this? I've still got my gear, you know. So if you want to match tonight, it's on, maggot. And Kurt Angle's very surprised that he's actually getting a match. And sadly, there's barely any pop for Slaughter. And no wonder this location we're in America did not get named by commentators, because they're a miserable bunch of mimes. Speaking of big pops, Taz is here.
Yay!
All is forgiven. And he's brought to you by milk and giant posters of The Rock to scare your kids. The Road to Savings, which is something related to cars. And of course, SmackDown for the PlayStation 1. And it's worth mentioning, this is the release date in North America for this game. So it's actually the day it's out, is then. So.
Oh, intriguing.
Cool. And Taz is taking on Crash Holly, Hardcore Champion. And it's interesting seeing these two wrestle in WF, because these two had a bit of a beef during Crash Holly's very brief run there.
And, did they?
I listened to both of them talk about it in their interviews they did with, I believe, High Spot in our video. Crash Holly, who was, I think, a young boy, one of Taz's lads. And one time he showed up and he's supposed to be, you know, setting up the arena, putting up chairs and move the guardrails and whatnot. Apparently he was tired from something, so he just slept on some chairs while everyone else did some work. And Taz had to be, you know, Taz, and be like, how dare you sleep here? You know, sleep if you can, survive if I let you, and all this stuff. And there was bad blood then. Crash Holly didn't last long after that in ECW. I don't think he wrestled or anything like that. It was just, you know, an underling. And then they get the WF, and apparently it was all good by that point. They talked it out. Everything's all right. But I thought it was an interesting thing that not many people talked about, the Crash Holly.
I didn't know. I knew that Mike Lockwood was there ever so briefly, but I didn't know, like, there was heat between him and Mrs. Sinertia, during his time there, because he had the audacity to sleep. Wrestlers are weird. I guess it's with any sort of thing that you're passionate about. There is such a pack mentality sometimes to it, where it's just like, oh, you're tired and you want to sleep. I haven't slept for a month, so therefore you are weak. So just let me sleep. It's like, funny yeah. Funny buggers.
I'll say this, though. It's an alpha male move for Crash Holly to fall asleep, right, so everyone can see him. Like, either he was completely knackered, or he went, oh, yeah. I'm sure you who's the medium-sized dog around here, Taz.
So you think it might have been a power play to do it in front of everybody?
Like a dog, he should have fell asleep on Taz's gear. Use it as a little pillow. He goes, where's my gear? And then Taz sees and goes, well, I don't want to wake him. He's so cute, lying there. Anyway, they brawl through the crowd almost immediately, and we get told Hardcore Holly suffered a torn rib cartilage. As you told us beforehand, a Samoan drop. Did it say who gave him the Samoan drop?
It was Rikishi.
Oh.
During a house show. So we might not see Bob for it. But I don't think it's as bad as we think it is, because Bob is back in time for Backlash.
And WrestleMania as well.
And WrestleMania, of course. Yeah, and for WrestleMania. So he's going to be fine. He's absolutely fine. He's sleeping
he's
it off okay. This week.
He's hardcore. Come on. Anyway, they brawl backstage and Crash dents a wall. And Prince Albert shows up but misses his flying whatever. And so does Big Boss Man. So Taz locks Albert in a freezer like the butler from Tomb Raider. And then Crash Holly hits Taz with a 2x4. And as Taz gets the... What have I written here? Oh, I see what I've written here. As Taz gets the you get beat up and lose push that has worked well so over the years, Crash Holly gets a sneak win and then leaves. And yeah, again, as I've done a very bad job of typing this up, Taz loses here, but it's because he got beat up so badly.
Yeah, so it wasn't... Kinda,
he still looks good in defeat, but if you do this every single week, eventually you're just going to look bad because you lose every day.
It wasn't a shoo-in for Taz, but like you say, there's only so often you can get away with losing via shenanigans before people just give up on you. And I'm nervous that Taz is very close to that side of the door, which makes me nervous for him.
Absolutely. And we go back to Steve Blackman's date. And I've typed his, she still talks lots.
That's, that's it. That's the whole bit, innit?
Yeah, good job they've learned the lesson from the Mae Young's APA segments and know that you've got to build these things up. You can't just do the exact same joke every time for five segments. But never mind that, because we walk into history. As Crash Holly is interviewed by Lillian Garcia backstage, and Crash Holly happens to say, wow, I'm so good at this hardcore malarkey. I'm the greatest. I'm this, I'm that, I'm everything. Hell, I'll just defend the title 24/7 all the time. Because why not? I'm so good, I can get away with it. And with that, a star is born.
Oh, this was one of those moments where I was watching this SmackDown back in the front room, and Alex was joined. Alex was there as well. So we're kind of watching the episode, and as soon as Crash starts talking, as soon as he says, "I'm so good at this thing," I went, "Ooh," and I picked up my phone and started writing. I think Alex would be like, "What's he said there?" That's so. I was like, "Well, this is important. This is like a. This is the birth of a big part of the industry. This is the first inklings of the 24/7 championship. You know, it's still a thing to this day. People look back on this era that we're about to boldly tread into, as one of the best eras for the hardcore championship when it was defended 24/7. It was just constant." Promos and shenanigans and backstage silliness. Oh, what a wonderful time we're about to enter.
Absolutely. This era is still remembered by people who haven't watched wrestling since.
And it's true. And now to the point where, like, one of the at least up until everything, until the world caught fire, one of the key areas of WWE programming was a belt that was kind of like, it's kind of considered the son of this particular belt, which is the 24/7 championship.
Well said. In the next segment, Road Dogg is here, but like Australia in 1996, DX has removed all their guns as Billy was blamed for the tag title loss at No Way Out and thrown out. So Road Dogg gets in the ring and says, "There were once some outlaws who were damn good, but one of them lost his manhood." But crowd's happy just to hear him say, "Suck it."
They're just there for the suck it, aren't they?
They're there for the suck it.
They're God. Only there for the suck it.
And this is the start of the Road Dogg X-Pac team, which I don't have that many happy memories of, to be honest with you, but we'll see where it goes. Maybe I was wrong. And Edge and Christian are here, continuing to get stalked by Terry.
Yeah, that's a bit weird. Like, she. How old would Terry be at this point?
Well, she has a age, and she has how old certain bits of her body are. Let me have a look. Terry. Matthew is getting her age.
Matthew is getting her age. The best thing you can do is take off her head and count the rings. Matthew's getting her age.
God, she's 34 here. But with the amount of plastic surgery she's had, some of her oddly, I mean, probably not the unintentional effect of plastic surgery when you do it like she's done it, is she look older.
So yeah, so that's it. She looks older than she needs than yeah. She was at this point.
It's a weird thing though. But anyway, yeah, so she continues to stalk both the lads. And yeah, it's a tag match. Edge and Christian taking on the new Age Outlaws, as named by Lawler. Yeah, that'll stick. And one positive thing of this throwing together tag team is the fact that they are definitely heels now. Crowd approved of Billy Gunn and the Suck It shenanigans. They hate X-Pac. So they're allowed DX Sucks chances. Suddenly the goalposts have been moved. And X-Pac is so hated that when Road Dogg has Edge in a chin lock, the crowd chant X-Pac sucks.
It's that glorious X-Pac heat, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's great because he turns to them and goes, I'm not even doing anything. He's on the apron waiting for a tag. And he's like, what? Edge gets the tag after a match. I couldn't be bothered to recap. Christian gets the tag that's only hot, but it's only thanks to the artificial heat they're pumping in. And there's been a lot of it this episode, rather like Terry Reynolds' face. Edge gets distracted by Terry, who slaps him for rejecting her advances. And that isn't like Edge. Christian gets distracted by the distraction, and X-Pac gets the X-Factor in the wacky Edge finish of the week. And we really need a Harry Hill segment audio for that, because it happens so frequently. The Edge finish of the week.
That's a nice callback.
Thank you. And then Christian pushes Edge, but nothing comes of it. Any thoughts here, Tom?
I forgot again another nice little bit that I'd forgotten about, which is the continuing saga of Terry trying to, I don't know whether she's trying to win over Edge and Christian or whether it's just she's trying to still screw over the Hardys or whether she's just being an arse for being an arse's sake. Road Dogg and X-Pac would be, they'd just be like the, I mean, they were tagging last year. Like, so they've been like the new age outlaws for quite a while now. It was fine. It was just a very straightforward match. Edge and Christian, they're going to be friends for a long, long time.
Yeah.
Yes, friends.
Yeah. Cool output for the APA.
Were you expecting me to say a bit more about the match?
No, it's like, yay, friends. I'm like, yeah.
Imagine that.
Moving on from friendship. A nice video package for the APA. Explain that they're open for business because they need beer money. And they have a, what are those things called where you put documents in?
A filing cabinet.
They have a filing cabinet and they're looking for the good beer. Nothing there, just ice. Open up the second one. There's the mediocre beer. Oh, and here's the bad beer. Sums up their gimmick very easily, very quickly. Good times with the APA. More to come.
I loved it. I'm ready for the APA era.
Absolutely. Shane McMahon and Big Show walk into DX's locker room. What does this mean, etc.?
Oh, trouble afoot, maybe.
Bleh. Tester's here. Hey, remember him?
Oh, how sad is it? We've got a video game segment and a test segment, but they're not connected.
He's not even good enough to be the guy who plays video games backstage.
And also, what did D'Lo Brown do tonight? Like, he was there getting chewed out by Angle for playing the wrestling game, and then he left halfway through his match on the screen, and then we never saw him on TV.
Well, the Godfather needed him.
Ah, for hoe and pimp based activities.
Godfather.
Do you have any hoes called Steph? There's one over there. Steph! How'd you do Rikishi's finisher? Do you remember?
Godfather's version of Stephanie. How do I look Ken Shamrock at Big Show in SmackDown 2?
I'm just checking the release date of... Because there's... Oh, it's not till August. We'll talk about it when we get to August. On a similar vein to SmackDown, the Dreamcast exclusive Royal Rumble comes out.
Oh, I've forgotten about that.
We'll have some fun when we get to that, mate.
What a game. Featuring 10-man Royal Rumble, but there's only about 8 people in, so there's just clones of Vince McMahon trying to throw you out.
And I don't know about you, but I bloody love when a wrestling match happens and then all the players get teleported backstage.
God, I haven't thought about that game in years, mate.
Oh, we're gonna dissect it in a couple of months' time.
Yeah. Hopefully while it's still alive.
Hopefully.
So, Tess taking on Viscera. Two guys we love making fun of. And Michael Cole is so thrilled about the idea of this match that he plugs a restaurant you can meet The Rock at this this week.
These two clearly aren't money. So we're going to move on and pretend that this match isn't happening. But they, right. But you know what? It's almost as if Test and Viscera hear the commentary and just go, screw you. We're going to really go for it in this match now.
Oh, and absolutely. Because after talking about Shane McMahon for 2 minutes, they then go outside. Test can't slam Viscera. So Viscera sends him flying over the ring steps a la Mick Foley. Viscera then climbs the bell ringer's table in a crazy sight. But he gets shoved off. They brawl into the ring. Test dunks Viscera's face in an exposed turnbuckle, slams him, and then nails the top rope elbow. And that is a hot, hot finish for a cold, cold guy.
It really is. Like, they just went for it near the end. It was fantastic. Good for them. Good for you, Test. Trying to snatch some glory from the jaws of apathy. I'm proud of you.
And again, Viscera, I love it when he has his little five-minute match where he does a lot, and then that's it. He's a sprinter, not a marathon runner. He's a lover, not a fighter. And afterwards, Shane and Sho leave the locker room. Ooh, what does this mean, etc.? It means, Tom, that we get more of Steve Blackman's date.
The never-ending story. I mean, I wouldn't mind if they added a little bit to this, but each time they've really not, unless they're about to.
Let's find out. She's still talking. That's good. Al Snow appears in the background to dance to the cafe's musician who's doing the personality. She's got personality song. Al Snow may as well have been carrying a giant arrow. Do you get it?
Huh? Well, Michael
Steve
Cole...
Blackman is dull and boring and she won't shut up. Personality. Personality.
Michael Cole did hit the joke over the head when they came back from it. And he was like, hey, did you hear they were playing the song Personality?
Oh, Christ.
Just to beat this over the head.
The guy who was playing the piano in the cafe, his name was Personality Jim. Like, what the?
No, if Steve Blackman had one of them, then it's cuts to Steve Blackman who says, can I order a personality? And they're like, no, you can order fish. Oh, no, I've made a terrible error. My character is personalityless.
Right, you expect them to be... Well, we'll get on with it later on. I'll do a criticism. I'll just...
we'll finish up shortly.
Speaking of personalities, here's one who has 15. Kurt Angle is here.
Hey, look. He's not like 15. He's not got like multiple personality disorders.
Oh yeah, he's not like that film that bombed. and the M. Night Shyamalan glass superhero thing.
Where the guy's got all the different. Yeah, it's a shame that bombed.
Yeah, he had so many personalities, and all of them think Steve Blackman is boring. Kurt Angle is here to say such sort of maybe old and bald. But there's a new hero you can all look up to. The Eurocontinental champ, Kurt Angle. And there is the mildest of mild pops for Sergeant Slaughter. And that's being nice. Oh. And this is the start of Sergeant Slaughter's annual show up to lose to the new guy squash.
When was the last time that Slaughter wrestled? I'm thinking, was it 1998? When he was
Oh, you mean but before becoming a cameo guy? Well, yeah. He had the little feud with Triple H and DX. We had the boot camp match at In Your House DX. But I'm pretty sure by that was a cameo.
He was
a regular
full-time
guy. That's a good question, mate.
He was Commissioner Slaughter at that point.
He was, and he was just sick of their personalities. So
incidentally, fun little caveat to that. On that show, In Your House DX, Sergeant Slaughter versus Triple H in a boot camp match, Slaughter comes out to what would become Kurt Angle's theme tune.
That's not right.
He
shouldn't have.
I know he shouldn't have, but he did. You watch In Your House DX, he comes out to Kurt Angle's theme music, which was before that the Patriots theme music.
Yeah. As a regular, I'm going to say 1992. Yeah, 1992, according to my records, when he was the last proper full-time guy. He, of course, did take the Sergeant Slaughter bump, as I call it, in the Rumble 92. It's completely ridiculous. Oh, we'll come into that in a minute. And then after that, he was around WWF. He'd sometimes appear at house shows and that. He did the AWF, bloody hell.
I was going to say, I'm sure he was in the AWF because I saw the promo with him talking about how revolutionary the round system is.
And then God, 98 was such a weird year. He had a boot camp match with Al Snow.
Ooh. On Raw.
In September of 98. That is a bizarre thing.
That must have been on an episode of Raw.
It was. Oh. God, what the hell is that about? Anyway, 98 is absolutely insane. You look at some of these results. And we go to Sergeant Slaughter now. What does he do? He gets a two count or some knee lifts. And the match isn't that great. Crowd isn't that into it. Don't really care that much. But never mind that. The match is made because someone has one of those whiteboards you can scribble stuff off and write new stuff on that says, "Where's General Adnan?" It's very clear. Nah, I got a big pop out of me. The Cobra Clutch gets locked in. There's actually a bigger pop for that than the Taz Mission. So they don't like Slaughter, but they love the Cobra Clutch.
Big pop for the Clutch. That made me happy. I think bigger pop for the Clutch than they did than for Slaughter's entrance.
Oh, absolutely. Kurt Angle's going to tap. Oh, my God. Then Kurt tries to throw him over the shoulder, but Captain Mannerin lands on his big, bald head. And God, that looked painful. But not as painful as Slaughter taking the Slaughter bump over the ropes and out the outside. And I checked, he was 52 when he did this.
That was a wild bump. That was a young person's bump, that was, where he went flying into the corner, bounced over the top and hit the ground. Jeez, just looked uncomfortable.
There was no need for him to do it, but I'm happy he did it. And Kurt Angle escapes the Cobra Clutch again. He's able to land the Angle Slam, but only just to end it. On paper, and for a nerd like me that loved Sergeant Slaughter as a kid, I'm like, yeah, this should be great. This should be awesome. Crowd is just like, all right.
I think because it's such a foregone conclusion that Angle's beating Slaughter. Like, there was no misconception. And also, the build-up was via one video package backstage. So there wasn't like a lot of hype for this. And I don't know whether they could have played something. I think nowadays, if they were going to do that now, they kill time by playing like a little video package of Slaughter to go, hey, look, this is what this guy has done. Former WWF champion. Da, 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 da. Little 30-second video just showing who Sergeant Slaughter is before he comes out would have made that.
Nowadays, if they did it, Slaughter would have won.
I mean, there is that too. Slaughter would have pinned him clean.
And the Ref Slam of the Week is brought to you by Back Talkin' Crushers, the action figures that talk back.
Matthew, what would your back talking action figures say?
Diddler. Over and over again. You squeeze me once and I never shut up. Diddler, diddler, diddler. Shut up! Shut up! Shut up! I'm throwing the incinerator and you can still hear me.
I was hoping you'd say woof woof boo moo, but I will accept diddler.
I have many catchphrases.
I'm
like The Rock at this point and call a holly. I mean, if it's not diddler, it's not wow, what a great podcast. Falling off the chair action. What would yours be? Was it just be welcome?
It would, I think it would be maybe love you bye or how you doing. Or if people in YouTube comment sections can stop being arseholes, that'd be great. Or maybe welcome everyone. I'd like it to be a number of those. I'd like it to be, right, five catchphrases that loop, all adorable, but then there is a hidden catchphrase that after like 15 plays through, it's just me going, kill everybody you know.
Oh God, Tom.
Show the people of the land your strength.
Be less positive. Wrestling's fake.
They have wronged you. You can make it right. Like just something really sinister as you pull that last time.
Gregory Iron's a liar.
I like Gregory Iron.
Yeah, I spoke to him yesterday for a video we wanted to do and he was a very nice chap.
He's ace. Bloody love
He spent the entire time putting me over and I was like, you were nice too.
Oh, so is he going to be in Botchamania? Is that an exclusive? Exclusive?
No, it's a thing for Gregory Iron's thing. He's trying to be an entrepreneur like all the good wrestlers should be now.
Very nice.
Because it turns out you can't make your rent just by going, I was in Jakarta once. And but never mind that. I don't talk about Gregory Iron or your action figure. I need to talk about the back talking crushers.
Come on then.
I went and Googled because I'm like, I'm interested in these figures. So many put out during this period. Like, they had to think of different ways to put over the same guys, and this is one of them. So you have Rock and Taker, Big Show and Austin. Would you like to know what they say when you squeezed them?
Yes, please, mate.
If you squeeze The Rock, he would go, "You can't hurt the people's champ." Undy would say, "Don't smash my arm." Austin's famous expression of, "You can't break my leg." And the Big Show's is, "It's showtime." Which doesn't make a lot of sense compared to the other ones. I'm going to tell you, I think there was a bit of mistranslation there. But this line would sell well enough to make a second line later on. And we'll make fun of that too when it comes to it.
Weird figures, didn't they, WWF? They are half made.
Right.
Do you remember the ones that sweat?
Yes.
Sweaty figures.
That was a proper 1998 action figure. Sweaty action figures.
Fill them with water so they sweat. Because for me, a big draw as a wrestling fan is when the wrestlers sweat. Somebody would have had to explain that. Brian in sales would have had to sell that. Hmm. And stand in the meeting going, "Now, we've done a focus group and we realised that 8 out of the 10 perverts that we focus grouped said they love it when wrestlers sweat. So, ta-da! Sweaty action figures." And also, per the pervert focus group that we did, 3 of them were going to come barefoot. Ta-da!
God. Yes. You also forget the ones we're calling WF Action Figures Presents, License to Print Money at this point. So, yeah, they sweat. Great. The brains pop out their heads. Awesome. They say one line of dialogue that isn't their catchphrase. Gimme 3. Oh, yeah. It would be good, though. They missed out on having a Big Show action figure that complains and whines every time you touch it.
"Why are you hurting me? What's changed?" Shut up, man.
The Rock started it. Anyway, Slam of the Week is still... What? Is Kane still mad at X-Pac for some reason and destroying the Dudleys and Road Dogg on Raw? So, next up, we have Kane versus both of the Dudley boys at the same time. And, no, I'm lying. Before that, Kurt Angle is very happy after defeating American Hero Sans Slaughter. So he rips up a big bag of popcorn in front of the cleaner because he's just so happy.
Because that's what I do when I'm happy.
Woo! Anyway, Kane versus Duds is here. Both Duds in at once. It's very much a handicap match. Devon is up for a tombstone. Bubba chop blocks him. So Kane drops Devon onto Bubba, but he doesn't sell it because it wasn't supposed to happen. And this goes on for a while until blah, blah, blah. Devon eventually chokes him through a table for the disqualification. Any thoughts here, Tom?
Fine match. I don't know. They didn't make the tag champs look bad, really. They looked like they were battering a monster in the form of Kane. But they put themselves in a situation where Kane couldn't lose, nor could the Dudleys. So we have this weird little DQ finish. I don't remember what was the impetus behind this match. Did they go into it?
Yeah, as we explained in the WF Slam of the Week presented by action figures that sweat
right.
When you squeeze them hard enough, that Kane must have been involved in a match with X-Pac and the Dudley boys, but then Kane was a house on fire. Oh, God, sorry, Kane. And ended up taking them all out.
Right, that makes sense. I must have missed that. I was too busy writing about action figures.
Yeah. I'm glad I'm here to help you out on the important things.
Thanks, mate.
And you are here to tell us about exciting pro wrestling in Japan. And speaking of things that are exciting in pro wrestling, Steve Blackman's date. Oh, no, what's this? Blackman's left, so it's just date. I'll ask what happened to Steve. And she says, well, apparently he had to leave. He had a brain aneurysm. And so Al Snow starts talking to her instead, and they actually get along fine. And that's it.
That's your payoff.
That's the punchline. And I know it's easy to pick on things that are badly written, but surely the joke should have been that she's normal and Blackman is just so dull and uninteresting that she leaves. I mean, sure, she should have been like, well, what do you do for fun when you're not wrestling? I like to play on my sticks and bounty hunt. I'm like, what's the last film you saw? Operation Sandman starring Hardcore Holly.
That's the last film we all saw.
What's the last song you listened to? My theme song. Like, it just doesn't work on any level. They don't get the joke. I don't think they're right. I think they scribble it down on a pad and just go, you figure it out. And it sucks. Any thoughts on this, Tom, before we move on and never speak of it again?
No, I think you've summed it up nicely. It just seemed a bit pointless. It, like, saying, there's no rule of three. There's no comedy three-act rule here where it's like three things that lead to a finish at the end. It wasn't even three. It was four, maybe even five. And with no conclusion, really, other than Steve Blackman left. This was pointless. This is pointless.
Yes. Well done for writing a beginning, and a beginning.
Yeah, that's exactly what they did.
Anyway, speaking of beginnings, Lillian's on the phone backstage, and Crash again reminds us it's 24/7, baby. So he heads out to the parking lot, puts the title in the trunk, but dun-dun-dun, it's the Mean Street Posse. And after a bin shot to Crash's head, Pete Gas tries to go for the pin. Oh, but Rodney breaks it up. They argue a bit. Oh, then Joey Abs tries to get the pin. Oh, and then they start fighting each other. And while they're doing that, Crash Holly drives off with the trunk still open. And this would be a repeated thing we'd see again and again. And it's a great use of the Mean Street Posse.
And it's the beginning of something special for the 24/7 title. I thought watching Lillian Garcia on a payphone was something that very much ages this show beautifully, with Lillian on a payphone. I thought Lillian was going to go for the belt.
But I thought that's what they were setting up for.
Mm.
But she's just there to go, hello, sorry, I'm speaking with the exposition team. What's that? 24/7?
Sorry, you were saying a podcast... I don't know what that is. Haven't heard of that before.
Yeah. And where are we? I don't know. I've scrolled
down
too far.
It's the main event o'clock, sir.
No, it's not. It's the slam of the night.
Oh.
God, there are a lot of slams of the week and the night tonight. And it's presented by SmackDown again. And guess what? It's friggin' Shane turning on The Rock. Oh, well, that was worth talking about, wasn't it?
As if we haven't had that rammed down our throats enough. Let's do it some more.
Exactly. And Shane McMahon decides, you know what? There's been enough Shane on SmackDown. And the crowd goes, yeah. So he's replaced himself with Triple H in this tag team match. Probably so he can cause a DQ again. Just a guess. And I couldn't be able to recap at this point. I think it was running a bit thin. So the highlight of this match was Rikishi getting worked over by Big Show. And Lawler putting him over by saying, wow, it's like getting hit by a 20-pound ham.
I don't know whether you've ever been hit by a 20-pound ham, but apparently it's pretty bad.
You know, I've never been hit by a 20-pound ham, but I'm pretty sure it would hurt. Big Show gets arse-faced, so he hits Rikishi with a chair on the outside on that still bandaged-up ankle and legs. In case you hadn't noticed how badly damaged it was. It's almost like it's had an identity change. Like the Joker and Batman. And Shane tries to distract. Triple H gets a low blow on The Rock. Big Show misses a chair shot on The Rock and hits Triple H. So Rock hits the Rock Bottom. And with Shane at ringside, goes to the people's elbow like an idiot. But he hits it. And then he pins Triple H. Huh. As I said, The Rock's plot armor is the strongest substance known to man. Adamantium has nothing on The Rock's plot armor.
Not at all, mate. Not at all. I think
With
everything that The Rock had been through, like constantly being knocked back by the evil DX, I think a clean win, a clean as win over the champ was something that sets him up nicely for WrestleMania.
I think so. Plus, Shane and Steph argue after the match, causing Triple H and Big Show to nearly brawl. Shane and Stephanie look like Pokemon trainers during the segment.
Big Show used push. It has zero effect. Just recycling an old gag there.
Why not, eh? And that, as they say, is that. For another wonderful episode of SmackDown, some highs and some lows. What were the things... Not the things. One thing that you remembered from this show, Tom.
I remembered... what do I remember from this show? Tell you what, I remembered the birth of the 24/7 championship. That was a big moment for wrestling. I think that when we look back on this show, that's probably one of the major takeaways is the 24/7 championship. 24/7 rules hardcore championship. What about you, sir?
I remember Slaughter. I was a big fan of Slaughter as a kid, so to see him randomly turn up against the new generation's best, Kurt Angle, I still remember that. I've been so happy to see him, like, yeah, get in, it's Slaughter. I didn't expect him to win, it was just the sight of him still doing his thing, and again, at age 52, to take that bump, the same bump he took at Rumble 92, that Sid Vicious hurt him, I forgot what injury he got, but he absolutely annihilated him with that bump.
It was ridiculous.
What was something you'd forgotten about this episode?
I forgot that APA ran commercials. Like, I always just accepted them as a thing. I was like, you buy the Protector of the Acolytes. I forgot there were actually adverts for them. And I loved seeing this again. It looked great. How about you, sir?
It's good, aye. Badly written, stupid S.A. Rios. That's what I've written it down as. Yeah, S.A. Rios is losing. He's about to lose his light heavyweight title, which he earned with that war they still talk about against Goldberg and Sunday Night Heat. And then Lita saves him, and then he's unhappy. Okay. Sure, why not? I mean, I can't think why he would be forgotten about in a year's time, but hey, there we go. So that was weird because, yeah, you're like, well, they've just shown up on SmackDown. They're only a week old, and they're already arguing. They're that one couple on the estate that you hear at 3 a.m. and you're just trying to sleep and you're like, bloody. And a month later, they're still together. You're like, just leave. Just split up. Get someone else to buy you fish and chips.
We'll get used to that for a little while. That's going to be a thing, baby. That's going to be a thing.
That's right. But that the second thing was going to be Blackman's date, but I've already forgotten about it.
And like Steve Blackman on his date, we're about to take a quick, sharp exit whilst the piano player plays Personality. Until next time, he is at Matthew Gregg on Twitter. I am at Tom Campbell on Twitter. Together, we are at Cultaholic on Twitter. Don't forget to join us.
Bleh.
Love you, bye.
And I'm Gangrel at White Wolf Won't Employ Me at Twitter.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.